This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Last night, the Cumberland County Board of Education joined a growing chorus of school boards who oppose a new law that removes career status for teachers. The measure replaces so-called tenure with a system that rewards the top 25% of teachers. Charlotte-Mecklenburg, the state's second-largest district, also voted last night to ask for a one-year reprieve from the new law. Wake County Schools passed a resolution opposing the 25% mandate last week, and Guilford and Durham County Schools are suing the state over that measure, as is the North Carolina Association of Educators. Governor Pat McCrory says he is reviewing the new law.
I think it's an example of passing a policy without clearly understanding the execution and the operations.
Joining us now is Eric Gukan. He is Senior Education Advisor to Governor McCrory. Eric, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you, Frank.
Also with us is Larry Nillis. He's an 8th grade social studies teacher and president of Wake North Carolina Association of Educators and a founding member of the NCAE Organized 2020 Caucus. Larry, welcome to you. Good to have you here.
I'm super glad to be here, Frank.
Larry, let's talk about this. Teacher tenure, first of all, that's the first thing we should explain. Tenure
Sure.
does not mean in the state public education system what it does in the university system. What is tenure?
That's right. Well, in North Carolina, the statute says career status for classroom teachers. What that means is that you get, after 4 years of probationary status and you've succeeded on your performance evaluations, you're extended this right, which affords you due process, affords you a guarantee to a school board hearing in case of proposed dismissal, mm-hmm. and then the right to a hearing at a district court. Now, as a part of that career status law, there are 15 reasons why a teacher in North Carolina public schools could be dismissed for all kinds of different reasons, performance being one of them, and insubordination being an important one because that seems, well, pretty broad to me.
All right. And so, Eric, tell us about the changes now that this new law makes to that system. The one that's in effect, and I know we're reconsidering it, but
yep. Well, the current law that was passed by the General Assembly this year says that tenure will be phased out by 2018, and that there will be and they've asked the school boards to develop a system whereby they would select the top 25% of teachers based on the metric that whatever the local board. It creates, and that top 25% would get a bonus over the course of 4 years. It would be cumulative of $500 a year for a total of a $2,000 raise. That's my understanding of the law.
That's how it's replaced. And so, Larry, I know your group opposes that law. Why?
Well, I think primarily what it seems to encourage or even require is competition between public school teachers. And I should say that at least part of the reason we're opposed to it is because it's so open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. We keep saying top 25%, but I don't think there's anything in the statute that says that. I'm sorry, the budget language that says that in particular. It just requires school boards to identify 25% of teachers and to develop a plan for doing that, which could conceivably, I think, be these 25% are our friends or our business partners. But in North Carolina, we've been moving achievement levels. We've been moving the graduation rate up. Things are getting better, and we're doing that because we're working together in ways that we haven't before. We're collaborating in intentional ways, and I'm sure Mr. Gukan saw that work in Charlotte Mech when he was there, and sees that work traveling around the state. But I also think that what school boards are reacting to, and what communities across the state, 25% now of school boards have passed resolutions opposing this. I think communities don't want teachers who come from a temp service, and that sort of feels like where this thing's headed.
Well, Eric, the governor has said he's going to reconsider. There has been an outcry. Teachers have been opposed to this and very vocal. Now we're seeing school boards who have been given great latitude. You can come up with the standard, saying we don't really like the way this is set up. First of all, what do you think they're reacting to, and why is the governor reconsidering?
Well, I think what we need to do is listen to educators, and I think that's very important. And the governor believes in local control, and the ability for a teacher in Knightdale and a school board member in Knightdale to make the laws for Knightdale and make the rules for students and children. We need to have a certain level of accountability. And more broadly, you know, it's important that we're talking about this 25%, but I think more broadly what we need is a long-term strategy to how we are going to compensate and evaluate our teachers, incentivize teamwork, and ensure that we're all working together. You know, Larry mentioned some of the really significant progress that we've made in our state in terms of student achievement. You know, the reality is we have a long way to go. According to the nation's report card, you know, only 35% of the fourth grade students in North Carolina are proficient readers, and that is not to say that anybody is to blame for that. But we have to all, as a community, teachers, students, families, we have to hold ourselves accountable for those kind of numbers, because in the United States of America, and certainly in the great state of North Carolina, that shouldn't be happening.
So I want to get to some of those bigger questions of what are those standards, and how do we create standards that hold teachers and the system accountable? But in this particular measure, the biggest complaint seems to be on the theory of competition, the idea that you would have, and let's assume that these school boards are really going to take the top 25, and let's assume that they're going to look for some kind of metrics that prove they're good teachers and not anything more cynical. The sense is that most of the best practices point to collaboration, and the suggestion that you would pick the top 25% means that a lot of teachers are not going to be sharing their information if their raise depends on it. That's the complaint we hear, Eric. Well, how do you think about that? How does the governor think about it?
I can tell you that we believe, Governor McCrory and I and the folks that we're talking to, we believe that teamwork is one of the most important skills you can have in the world in which we live. I was just with Governor McCrory recently, and that was in Mooresville at Mark Edwards' great school district. That's exactly what he was talking about, the ability for us to work in teams and as communities to drive our own success and our own destiny is really critical. So we really do feel as though we need to be listening to our local communities, and we need to take a step back and examine this law and try to ensure that but let me be clear, we have to have a common standard, and we have to hold our students to it and our teachers to it. And I think that's important.
All right. Well, so, Larry, let's talk about that. Well, I guess the idea of collaboration then, we're sort of agreed on that. And a suggestion that maybe there's a better way to go about it than this legislation. What would it look like, though? Accountability is important. We have to do better than we're doing now, even though we're doing better than we had in the past. What do those standards look like? Well, how would you set up a merit system that would truly hold teachers and our education system accountable?
I think the question of a merit system is one that we have in public policy circles, but it's not one that we have anymore in education circles. I think a few weeks ago at the Emerging Issues Forum down at the Raleigh Convention Center, I think it was Daniel Pink, maybe, is that a guy? Essentially said, look, nobody writes master's theses about merit pay anymore in schools of education, because that issue's closed. And I guess one of the things that's really frustrating from my perspective as a teacher and a leader of the largest NCAE local affiliate in the state is that we apply standards to teachers that we would never apply to other areas. The general public doesn't tell dentists how to do their job. And most citizens accept their auto mechanic's diagnosis of the problem. I absolutely agree that we have to hold teachers accountable. We our organization, worked for years to develop the North Carolina Educator Evaluation System, which is a growth model, has seven standards, I think. Mm-hmm. The sixth one is about test scores, which I think is a silly standard, but I think most people on the other side of this debate think's a good one. That's supposed to be a growth model. That's supposed to be a model that encourages teachers to develop. Plans like this one, I think, and I keep gesturing to you, Mr. Gukan, but that's not fair because this isn't your plan. Plans like this one would encourage people to not admit that right. They're up to snuff on something, would prevent them from asking for help, and would be contrary to that model.
You talked about test scores being silly. Do they play any part in a merit system or any part in an evaluation system?
I don't think that standardized tests were created to do all of the things No, I'm sorry. I know that standardized tests weren't created to do all of the things that we're asking them to do. And when you look, say, at New York City, where they would use standardized test scores to measure educator effectiveness, we'd have standards of deviation of like 30 points. I'm not a statistician, but that's a pretty big standard deviation. So we need to know. We need to use tests to figure out certain measures. But I think the other thing is that these tests we give in North Carolina measure very small number of things. We want a lot more out of our public schools than just that kids can read this passage and solve that problem.
So they shouldn't be the sole criterion, but you do think they play a part in evaluating seizures, or you don't think they play any part?
Do I think that it makes sense for me to argue that we should not have that in this context, that we should not have standardized tests as a part of the evaluation system? No, I don't think so. But do I think they're effective at measuring the things that we're asking them to do? No. And I think the only way to really evaluate the work teachers are doing is to have intense in-classroom observations.
All right. Well, let's Eric, let me ask you the first question I asked Larry, which is what does it look like if you could draft the plan and get it through? What would it look like?
Well, I am glad Larry mentioned the teacher evaluation instrument. And I think the teacher evaluation instrument, which has been it does have multiple measures, which include standardized test scores. And I would argue pretty strongly that standardized test scores are an important multiple measure, because what they allow us to do, I was just in Sampson County today, they allow us to compare the performance of a Sampson County with a Durham County where we're talking from. And I think that is critically important. The other thing that a standardized test score is, it allows us to compare ourselves to other states and other countries. And I think in this global economy, that is really important. Now, do I think that standardized tests are perfect? Certainly not. And Governor McCrory has spoken rather loudly about the fact that we have gone too far and that we are over-testing our children. And I think this has largely been, Larry mentioned policymakers, different administrations coming up with a new test and their new thing without taking away anything else.
I'm going to stick with the standardized test for just another half second, then we'll move on, because it does seem to me you set up a problem for yourself if you use tests, if tests become too large a factor. For instance, if I'm a teacher looking at a county where my raise depends on standard test scores, and I see that county, it's a poor rural county, those test scores are always going to be low for a lot of reasons. And I'm not going into that county because the standardized test scores will be low. It's going to be too hard. Isn't there something the state has to do to sort of to compensate for a very difficult county with measures beyond what can happen in the classroom?
I think I agree that we have to have multiple measures, Frank. What I do think, though, is that in the United States of America, if you start off in kindergarten and you have 5 years to learn to read, that you ought to be able to read. And right now we are falling woefully short of that. And we need, and you mentioned rural counties. You know, there are schools in rural Northampton County, for instance. There's a school called Gaston College Preparatory where they are graduating 100% of their kids. There are 1,200 kids in that school, so you can't be skimming the kids from that school. So I think if you hold students to a high standard, if you go above and beyond, and yes, I mean, we in Raleigh need to be encouraging and lifting up schools like that. And frankly, if a school isn't measuring up, we need to try to support them. And then I think we need to find another solution.
All right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree about supporting schools. And I think you're probably bound by more than I am, which allows me to say I think that one of the things that Mr. Gutkan said was that in the United States of America, if you start in kindergarten and can't read by grade 5, then something's obviously wrong. I agree with that. But I would say that starting in kindergarten is starting too late, particularly in parts of the county like those that you described.
I agree with that.
I guess what troubles me about standardized tests, and I don't want to seem like some kind of wacko, but the places that we like to compare ourselves to, when we say, oh, the sky is falling, Finland's clobbering us, well, they don't test in Finland. They do all kinds of other things to raise academic achievement levels. They have policy to bring the right kind of people into the classroom and to support them and to help them grow. We depend kind of on magic here in this country good teachers.
Well, let me tell you, a test can't be the only answer, and money isn't the only answer, but both of those are an important part of the equation, it would seem to me. And if you don't agree with that, you can tell me right now. But one of the things we're looking at in this competitive environment with the current legislation is that there's this finite sum of money. And under a different model, if we were to have a teacher evaluation that included teachers and principals and others, it might mean that it's an entitlement program that everybody who qualifies for this gets a loan, and that means you have to come up with the money. Is the state ready to do that? And are we talking about being able and are we willing to pay teachers what they deserve if each and every one of them meets that standard that gets those kids reading well before fifth grade?
Governor McCrory and our legislative leaders showed just a month ago that they are committed to investing in education. And if you're going to invest in education, the number one place to invest in education is in our teachers. We made an announcement. It was the first step of a larger, more comprehensive plan, and I really want to emphasize that. The teachers in their first 10 years are going to receive up to a 14% raise, as we are criminally low in how we pay. The beginning of the salary schedule is $30,800, and over the next on or before the next 2 years, we're going to raise that base pay to $35,000, which still isn't enough, but you have to start somewhere. There's an NEA statistic on the state of North Carolina, NEA, the National Education Association, that says that from 2001 to 2011, North Carolina actually ranks 51st in their overall underinvestment in teaching. And we are in a deep hole, and this is not going to happen in a short session. It's not going to happen in a year. It's probably going to take us 5 years of consistent investment, and we really need to listen to educators, bring everybody to the table to create a method by which our teachers are being compensated for how effective they are in the classroom. And that effectiveness really matters. And we want to encourage teachers to have career pathways so that they can work together so that all students can benefit.
Is this important enough? Is it an important enough investment in North Carolina, given how far behind we are, to consider raising taxes if that's what it takes to really pay teachers what they're worth?
Raising taxes, I think, is a decision above my pay grade. But what I will say is that we are committed to a long-term strategy and a long-term investment, and that is either going to come from revenue or reallocation. We were able to do this initial base pay raise, which is significant. It's the first raise, double-digit raise in at least a decade that I'm aware of. That kind of an investment, I think, shows that we're serious about this. It's about $200 million.
Larry. The raise that Mr. Gukan describes is important, but I would quibble with the language from someone in my perspective whose pay has been frozen since the last step we got in 2008. It doesn't feel so much like a raise. It feels kind of like maybe catching up for some of us to where we ought to be.
I don't disagree with that.
I didn't think you would. But I wanted to respond a little bit to the question you asked Mr. Gukan. Before you got to the end of your question, Frank, it sounded to me like you were describing a program that I might call the North Carolina Teaching Fellows Program, which is a program that's been eliminated. I think what's going on is that we're working at cross purposes here. And I think all the things Mr. Gukan says, I think I would mostly agree with. I think we've had conversations just in the lobby, and I've heard him say other things that I largely agree with, but we're working at cross purposes here in North Carolina. This 25% thing where we started was part of the budget, right? It never got debate in the House. And it's part of the reason that it came through without a lot of review. But that budget also included tax cuts for really wealthy North Carolinians. And included things like, you know, guaranteeing that we'd undercut the Affordable Care Act, among other things. So those are all parts of this conversation. And we can't really – I don't think – I would say, yeah, let's raise taxes. Again, I don't have the same limitations that Mr. Gukan has. But those things are all going on, and they're all part of this conversation.
I have just a few seconds left, Eric, but I want to – you know, this quote that the governor – I think it's an example of a passing a policy without clearly understanding the execution. This is a leadership question. The governor is the leader. Will he take now a greater leadership role in education if he really believes that this was passed without clearly understanding the implications?
Yes.
I want to thank you both for being on the program, and we will hold you accountable to that.
I understand.
Thanks, Frank.
Eric Gukan is Senior Education Advisor to Governor McCrory. Larry Nillis is an 8th grade social studies teacher, president of Wake North Carolina Education Association. No, Wake NCAE, and the founding member of NCAE Organized 2020 Caucus. Thank you for being on the program as well.
Thank you all.
Coming up next, the Dixie Highway and how it transformed the South. Stay tuned.